Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. I'm Wyatt Orm.
And I'm Allison Bechtesh. Aspen City Council has voted to become the first in Colorado to raise the age to buy tobacco.
A decision on a divisive Mid-Valley development could come by the end of the month.
Teachers at the Glenwood Center for the Arts have made sure that the show still goes on despite not getting paid.
And we talk with a chef who will whet our appetites before this weekend's Food and Wine Classic.
Those stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition.
Garfield County Sheriff's Office arrested a married couple from Silt on Tuesday. Charles Ferris and his wife Charla are charged with stealing around $1 million from the Bear Wallow Ranch outside Glenwood Springs, where they worked for nearly 25 years. They're also suspected of stealing livestock. After 8 months of investigating, authorities searched the couple's house near Silt. The Bear Wallow Ranch covers about 2,600 acres. The owner is Joe Rogers Jr., who is a former CEO of the fast food chain Waffle House. The ranch was for sale for at least a time in 2014, but has since been taken off the market.
The 8-year-old boy who died hiking at Hanging Lake on Monday is Noah Reagan. He and his family are from Highlands Ranch near Littleton on the Front Range. Reagan was near the Spouting Rock area and the waterfall. Authorities are still determining if he was hit by a falling rock or if he slipped and hit his head.
Citizens working to block the development of new city offices in Aspen were handed a setback on Tuesday when their referendum petition was denied.
Petitioners Steve Goldenberg and Marsha Goshorn contend that an ordinance passed this spring allowing the reconfiguration of Galena Plaza goes against the civic master plan. On May 15th, City Hall critic Tony Kronberg turned in the petition in an effort to reverse that decision. 700 signatures were collected, but yesterday City Clerk Linda Manning ruled only 396 of those are valid. Additionally, City Attorney Jim True has determined the deadline for that petition was May 12th, not May 15th. The city is moving forward with its plans to build the 47-foot-tall, 37,000-square-foot office building, which will be located between Rio Grande Place and Galena Plaza.
The list of Democrats wanting to be Colorado's next governor is growing. Democratic Congressman Jared Polis of Boulder says he'll run against his colleague, Congressman Ed Perlmutter, along with other high-profile opponents. Benta Berkland has more.
Polis is the latest, wanting to replace Governor John Hickenlooper, who's term limited. Former State Treasurer Kerry Kennedy, former State Senator Mike Johnston, and businessman Noel Ginsburg are also in the race. Colorado State University political science professor Kyle Saunders says he's surprised Polis is running.
This is a lot of talent to put into one race. There's going to be some money spent here that doesn't necessarily need to be spent competing among Democrats. Usually the party would have cleared the field for one of these really strong candidates.
Saunders thinks at this point, Congressman Ed Perlmutter and Polis are the likely frontrunners. Polis represents the 2nd Congressional District, which includes Fort Collins, Boulder, and parts of the West Slope, such as Eagle and Summit counties. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
It's almost decision time on a controversial development in the Mid-Valley. The Eagle County Commissioners have indicated they could move on the tree farm project by the end of this month. No matter their decision, some will be infuriated, others will rejoice. Wyatt sat down with producer Kristen Kay to talk about the proposed development.
Remind us of the arguments for and against this development.
So the supporters of the tree farm would say this is a big step in the right direction. It does something to address the valley's affordable housing needs, and it does so in an environmentally friendly way. The detractors, those who are against the tree farm, say the project is way too big, it's going to make bad traffic way worse, and it doesn't even provide enough affordable housing to begin with.
Is there enough affordable housing in this project?
So it's a good question. Eagle County's staff says that there is, and they're recommending the commissioners approve the project with conditions. The developer has met Eagle County's affordable housing requirements. And they've also said that 150 residencies will be available as resident occupied, which means that basically locals only can buy them. There's a little caveat there. They're available to locals for 60 days, but after those 60 days, they can be sold to anyone, but someone who's buying the property from out of town would have to pay a fee. The people who are against the project really question whether or not there is enough affordable housing. They also say that 60 days is not really enough time to ensure that these units aren't just gobbled up by second homeowners.
Okay, so the Eagle County staff recommends approval of this project, but will the project get approved?
So even though the development meets Eagle County's requirements, commissioners need to take into consideration how compatible the project is with the local community. And Basalt's Town Council has made it very clear they really don't want this project to go forward. Basalt is really worried about being put at a competitive disadvantage by the commercial space that's being proposed at the tree farm. So the tree farm isn't technically in Basalt. It's in unincorporated Eagle County. So it's kind of playing by a different set of tax rules than businesses in Willits, say, which are part of Basalt. And Basalt gets a lot of sales tax revenue from Willits. And so having more competition is potentially damaging for Basalt.
Okay, so we might know about this development by the end of the month.
We might know.
To hear more of our conversation, subscribe to our podcast, The Dial. To listen, go to aspenpublicradio.org and under the Your News tab, click on The Dial.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bektesh. Stay in the know with what's happening in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond through our social media channels. Follow Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram and like us on Facebook for news updates, compelling images, and intriguing stories. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station. The Republican healthcare bill that cleared the House in May is now in the Senate. We don't know yet what their version of the bill will look like. Some media reports suggest there's one coming quickly. Wyatt spoke with Bonnie Wasley, the interim chief financial officer for Valley View Hospital in Glenwood Springs, about what impact the bill would have on the hospital if passed in its current form.
Was the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, was that a good thing for Valley View Hospital?
It was a good thing for Valley View Hospital. And in fact, I think in Colorado, rural hospitals have been helped immensely because out of it, it provided a funding mechanism to fund hospitals that had extraordinarily high levels of uncompensated care.
The Medicaid expansion, in other words.
Yes. It also provided for an additional payment to hospitals to help cover uncompensated care costs. I think some things that we saw with the Affordable Care Act actually increased some of our reporting that we needed to do and increased some of our costs.
So moving on to the American Health Care Act, which is the Republican Obamacare replacement, it was passed by the House of Representatives in early May, and it's now moved on to the Senate. If the American Health Care Act were passed, what would it do to Valley View Hospital?
It would be very devastating. 54% of our patients have some sort of governmental type coverage. When I say that, I mean Medicare or Medicaid. So people would be coming to our emergency room when their situation was dire or life-threatening, and we would treat them then, and that's a very expensive way to provide care.
So in other words, because people don't have insurance, they're not getting the preventative care that they need. And so the very expensive emergency care, the onus falls on you financially, you, the hospital.
Exactly. Under the AHCA, we are not confident that the essential health benefits would be maintained, such as mammograms, colonoscopies, primary care, preventative visits on an annual basis. So I think that's one of the downfalls of the AHCA is the We don't understand what is going to be covered under essential health benefits.
Does the American Health Care Act, the AHCA, does it do anything right?
I like the encouraging the use of health savings accounts. I think that is a really good thing for Americans.
Why?
Because if that's your health savings account for life, and if you start contributing $20 a month to that and you don't use it very often, by the time you're an older person, you'll have quite a sum.
Is that an equivalent trade for the cutting of costs that the bill...
No. That might impact people who are well insured and who have a good wage. It will not impact, I don't think, a Medicaid or a Medicare unless the federal government contributes to an account for them.
You're saying, in other words, that a health savings account is really only going to make sense for people who have the money to save. Someone who's not making any money is not going to be able to contribute anything.
Yeah.
Have you ever spoken with any colleagues at other rural hospitals? Do you have the same concerns that they do? Is Valley View better positioned if something like the American Healthcare Act passes?
I think that we are a hospital that is financially stable. Patients from the surrounding region come to us for specialty services. For the small, small rural hospital, I think it's probably much more challenging to them. But I think the AHCA is gravely concerning for all hospitals. We will somehow survive, and I think that's what hospitals have always done.
Would the proposed cuts at all affect your ability to recruit doctors?
You know, I think everybody's going to be in the same boat. Will it impact pay and will it impact our ability? It's going to impact everybody's ability, and it's just going to change the landscape of healthcare.
Bonnie Wasley is the interim chief financial officer for Valley View Hospital. Last week, the Glenwood Vaudeville Review hosted a benefit gala for the Glenwood Center for the Arts. After the center's executive director resigned in April, police began investigating its finances, and the nonprofit was close to shutting its doors. But an outpouring of community support salvaged the Arts Center in a limited capacity and is now raising money to pay its teachers. Claire Woodcock reports.
The lobby of the Vaudeville is buzzing with activity. Children flying past adults in dazzling cocktail dresses and ball gowns taking sips from their wine glasses as they bid on silent auction items and socialize. Everyone here is a friend of the Glenwood Center for the Arts, a 35-year-old institution that has cultivated a community spanning generations. Amy Levinson is a part-time art teacher at the center. She says the organization's founders represent the past. Friends like her represent the present.
The people who are here tonight are part of the future. They're going to help keep the center going and hopefully thriving.
Levinson has been teaching after-school art classes for the last 3 years, but she hasn't been paid since February, and neither have her colleagues.
We'd been waiting for a while. We kept being told it's next week.
She says she saw the writing on the wall back in March when she was told that that month's check wouldn't actually be issued until the end of April.
I thought, that's weird. We should be paid the first week of the following month. You know, we're paid monthly, so that was not a surprise. And then I just had a bad feeling.
That gut feeling turned out to be right. Shortly after, the center's executive director resigned and the Glenwood Springs Police Department launched an investigation into the nonprofit's financials. In the midst of it all, the city of Glenwood Springs cut off funding for the Arts Center. In May, the nonprofit's board considered closing its doors for good. Levinson acknowledges she's lucky because she has another job keeping her afloat.
But for some of the more full-time employees, it's been a terrible struggle. Some people had to leave. I mean, that's just the reality. This valley's very expensive to live in under the best of conditions when you're employed. To be unemployed and just have the rug pulled out from under you is really hard.
Still, Levinson says most of the educators have continued teaching voluntarily because of their passion for art and their love for the students. She's one of 22 part-time teachers who worked as independent contractors for the nonprofit.
One of the focuses of tonight's event is to get our teachers paid. And at the same time, it's not volunteer work. They deserve to be paid for their talent.
The people that I care the very most about are the children and families who really consider the Center for the Arts to be home.
That's Maureen Toffer, director of the Arts Center's dance program. She's been involved with the center's governing body, the Glenwood Springs Arts Council, since its inception in the early 80s. She says with spring being her busiest season, having not been paid since the end of February has been particularly hard on her.
at that point, we were pretty well deep into creating choreography, costuming. Our students even had ticket packets, and they were out selling tickets for our performance. So certainly this was a case where there was no doubt the show would still go on, and there was really no one who felt otherwise.
She and the other teachers are now volunteering their time to their students, like Rhea Stott, who is 8 years old and has been taking a multitude of classes through the Arts Center for the past 5 years.
Let's see what I can remember. Ballet, jazz, tap, modern, hip-hop, and junior company. I think that's it.
Stott says she wants to be a professional Broadway dancer and a veterinarian when she grows up. Here's Toffer and Stott chatting at the gala.
Why do you love to dance?
It just makes me happy and strong.
Her mother, Jennifer Stott, lives in Glenwood Springs. She supports the center because of its mission and reputation.
Creativity is one of the most important assets that you can have, and the funding in the public schools right now has been moving away from arts, so I just think it's so important for kids to have that outlet somewhere.
Before Friday night's gala, the organization was in the red with its teachers roughly $30,000. The Arts Council was able to raise a third of that Friday. 10,000 down, 20 more to go. Claire Woodcock, Aspen Public Radio News.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Wyatt Orm. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. While you're browsing our site, make sure to sign up for ForkFed, our weekly digital newsletter. ForkFed arrives in your inbox every Friday, catching you up on the week's news in a fun and informative way. Roaring Fork Valley is in good hands with Mountain Rescue Aspen. The local organization received high marks in a recent assessment.
Every 5 years, the search and rescue organization is evaluated by the International Mountain Rescue Association. The local team received marks on a number of scenarios, including avalanche rescue and steep recovery situations, such as if a climber needs assistance or if a vehicle has rolled on Independence Pass. Jeff Edelson, Mountain Rescue Aspen's board president, explained that even though the accreditation is voluntary, it's important to have regular evaluations from outside organizations. The team received top marks across the board.
We actually got tons of feedback from our evaluators that, you know, they'd be happy to have us come rescue their family. They feel our team was very deep, very well trained, very well prepared.
Edelson says as we get into summer adventure season, the best thing someone can do is to prepare for worst case scenarios by bringing extra supplies, layers, and informing friends or family where they'll be.
Roaring Fork Valley native Ricky Gates is a little over halfway through a 3,500-mile run across the country. Elizabeth Stewart Severy caught up with him on his stopover in Aspen last week, which included a little friendly competition.
Dude, the water's fast. And Jules, look at him. He's a freaking Viking. Go put your shoes on.
It's not exactly an age-old rivalry, but on a cloudless day in early June, a small group gathers near the Slaughterhouse Bridge in Aspen for an unusual race. Kayaker versus runner. It's dubbed the Runoff.
This is a cool course because you can look down as a runner and see the boaters down below you for quite a ways, and then the last mile and a half is a mystery because you can't see anything.
Ricky Gates put together the unofficial race, now in its second year. The course runs from the Slaughterhouse Bridge to Stein Park, with kayakers on the Roaring Fork River and runners on the Rio Grande Trail. The 4 or so mile race is meant to fall at peak spring runoff, but this year Gates is a little ahead of the snowmelt.
But I'm not going to be here 3 days from now.
Fair enough.
The stop in Aspen is a quick respite in a 5-month journey from South Carolina to San Francisco. He's
3/5 or possibly like 11/17 or something like that.
Of the way there. He just ran over the Continental Divide from Leadville to Aspen. And he's covered sections of the Palmetto, Appalachian, Ozark Highlands, and Colorado trails. He's jogged back roads, highways, and sections of interstates across 8 states. And took a stand-up paddleboard alongside barges in serious headwinds down the Tennessee River.
I've slept in the rain quite a few times. I've had some really long days. I've been eating terrible food, a lot of gas station food, Pop-Tarts and Slim Jims and you name it. But as far as human interactions go, it's been 100% positive.
After a few days in his hometown, Gates took off again, this time over the Elk Mountains. He planned to float the Gunnison River to Grand Junction and then head into the desert on foot.
That's kind of where a large section of mystery lays for me.
Gates says he'd like to run through the wildlands rather than on roads and highways through Utah and Nevada.
It's just going to be hot and dry, and there's going to be a lot of miles in between water.
He has a couple hundred miles to figure out his route, and he's taking it day by day. At this year's runoff, the water was faster. A kayaker outsprinted Gates by just a few seconds, but Gates likes his chances for the next 1,000 miles. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio News.
On Monday night, the Aspen City Council voted to pass tobacco legislation it hopes will set the standard for a statewide movement to increase the buying age from 18 to 21. Ahead of that vote, Allison found it is not easy to go up against the tobacco industry.
Kim Levin is the Pitkin County Medical Officer. For a year now, she's been working to pull off something no one else in the state has done.
Raising the minimum age from 18 to 21 of the minimum legal purchase sale of tobacco.
Bottom line, tasked with looking out for communal well-being, Levin identified smoking as the most preventable way of improving public health. We know it causes lung cancer, but also
diabetes, high blood pressure, coronary artery disease, peripheral vascular disease.
And while those diseases don't present themselves when you take your first drag, 90% of smokers began the habit in their teen years. And where do teenagers get cigarettes? 18 to 21-year-olds. The city of Aspen could pass a new law that increases tobacco sales to age 21, but it wouldn't have a lot of teeth to it. There's something unique about Colorado. Statewide, there is no license required to sell cigarettes. There are rules, of course, but the consequences for breaking those rules is a fine, which, by the way, the tobacco industry is happy to pay for.
Business owners will contact the tobacco company, say, hey, we got a fine. Will you help us pay it?
That's Eric Brodell, the Western Region Director for Preventing Tobacco Addiction Foundation. He's been assisting Levin as she's worked to change the age laws here. So to get around that big tobacco money, what a town in Colorado must do is create a tobacco retail license, or TRL. And part of that license agreement can be that all buyers must be over 21. Then the consequence for breaking rules would be a way bigger deal. We're talking losing that license and the ability to sell your products, not just coughing up a fee. Creating a TRL goes against state law, but it's allowed, at a cost. Because the system now is, in exchange for communities not regulating cigarette sales, the state kicks back some of the tax collected.
For Aspen, we figured that's around $75,000.
So Aspen is working to create a system where a business can't sell tobacco products unless they have a license. But if council votes to do that tonight, it means $70,000 less in the general fund. In a work session this spring, the 5 council members had no problem with that cost. Ann Mullen said, with the amount of money the city currently spends to support health services, the program could pay for itself.
This is the same contribution. In fact, it's preventing the problems that we're trying to solve. There may not be a lot of 18-year-olds in the hospital with lung cancer, but they'll be back at 40 with lung cancer.
There are other ways of making up for the lost tobacco revenue. Councilmember Adam Frisch sees an even bigger end goal to a city-based licensing system.
We're going to have to get involved in some type of a city tax.
Since the ordinance has been proposed, Frisch has received correspondence from national lobbying organizations against tobacco regulation. The council has been accused of nanny state-style government overreach, harming small businesses, and even increasing health risks by including vaping systems called e-cigarettes in the ordinance. Vaping is a booming industry. Users inhale water vapor instead of smoke, but they still deliver nicotine.
We have a small little section of nicotine e-juice is what I'm pretty sure that the council is concerned about.
Matt Pavia is the proprietor of One Love Smoke Shop and Oxygen Bar, a small shop up from Cooper Avenue in downtown Aspen. He doesn't sell tobacco, but he does sell vaping paraphernalia, which he says helps smokers quit. He thinks the measure will hurt the second-tier local shops like his.
It might hurt these little nook and cranny places, you know, that, I mean, there's not a lot of places like this left.
There are six businesses in town that would need tobacco licensing if the ordinance passes tonight. 10 minutes away, outside of city limits, there's two shops that sell cigarettes and wouldn't need to comply with the age restriction. Plus, you can get e-cigarettes online easily. No matter, says Pickens County Health Officer Kim Levin. She started this measure in Aspen knowing she'd have support, but she has her eyes on a bigger goal.
I think that it's going to hopefully have a ripple effect and influence other communities to do the same, and eventually the state of Colorado.
Aspen City Council did approve the tobacco legislation on Monday with a vote of 5-0.
The Aspen Food and Wine Classic kicks off tomorrow. One of this year's best new chefs is Angie Marr, who owns the Beatrice Inn in New York City. She'll be showcasing her skills this weekend. She sat down with arts and culture reporter Claire Woodcock to talk about the passion and soul that go into her dishes.
Anybody that says that cooking is art, I vastly disagree with, because cooking is a craft. It's something that it takes time to build skill, and what I love about it is that we learn every day. I'm still learning. I'm still learning new techniques and you know, new things and coming up with new ideas. And that's what I love about this industry, is we are always learning.
How are the ways that you are trying to make your mark on the culinary industry, but more specifically the meat industry?
One of the great things I think that we do very well here at the Beatrice, and just with the way we cook, is I don't put anything on my menu that I don't love 110%. You know, there is so much thought and passion and soul in every dish that is on my menu. And I think that's tremendously special. I think that where a lot of restaurants and chefs go wrong is they try and be everything to everybody. And it can look beautiful, but if there's no soul and no story behind that dish, then no matter what, it's never going to be as good as it could be, which is why I'm so adamant about only cooking the things that I really love to eat. And there's not one thing on my menu that I don't really love, and I won't get behind 110%. And I don't do pasta. I don't do vegetables. I don't do cooked fish. And that's because these aren't the things that I really love or I'm really passionate about. We cook meat here. And if we can give a little bit of ourselves and have people eat our food the way we want it to be eaten and have them have this really great experience through our vision and through our eyes, that's all I could ever ask for. But I think that for me, my food isn't really meant to pamper or placate. It's meant to be experienced.
How do you plan to use your recognition as a best chef of 2017 to elevate cultural diversity in the food industry?
I always say that everything starts around a dinner table, and they can come and have some of their best experiences and memories and a relationship start around one of my dinner tables, and that's all I really want.
That was Chef Angie Marr discussing her approach to food with arts and culture reporter Claire Woodcock.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Wyatt Orm.
And I'm Allison Bechtesh. To hear the show again or subscribe to our Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup. News director Carolyn Zachariasen talks with a panel of local journalists about the week's news.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.